Thanks for listening to this episode of the Westerosi Primer. For full show notes and more about all things Westeros, head to thewesterosiprimer.com. Before I start playing the intro music, check out this friend of the show.
Are you tired of having to change to different podcasts for different topics?
You think you know what we're going to talk about.
And welcome back to Three Fates Decide.
Then we're the podcast for you. Three Fates Decide podcast ranges in a variety of topics, all the way from true crime to reviewing different movies, shows, theater, to the hottest pop culture gossip and topics.
It just sounds more dramatic that way.
All right, so this week we are going to be talking about...
You can find us on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and all other podcast players. New episodes post every Friday. Feel free to also follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Three Fates Decide with the three spelled out. You can also shoot us an email at threefatesdecide@gmail.com to send us topics you want us to cover. We want to cover what you want. Want different topics? Well, then let the Three Fates Decide.
Three Fates Decide podcast.
Greetings, fellow acolytes. Welcome to another episode of the Westerosi Primer. My name is Liz. If you're new to this podcast, welcome. I hope you enjoy this journey of all things Westeros. And in this episode, I'll be finishing up my discussion of Aegon III. I also will be doing the necessary setup for the next two, possibly three episodes of this podcast. It depends again on how much information I wind up covering in those scripts. Before I start the discussion, I want to do a quick bit of housekeeping first. First announcement is that even though I had set up an email address for this podcast, it's not professional sounding using a Gmail address. Plenty of other podcasters use Gmail, but I realize it might not make people take this show seriously enough. The email address is host@thewesterosiprimer.com. It is also listed on the podcast website. I wouldn't mind getting questions, comments, feedback, etc. Though if you're going to express anything negative, at least be polite about it. As another reminder, I won't be releasing the next episode until January 8th. Before I close out this episode, I have a final message to make, so please continue listening to the very end. Now I'll get to the usual disclaimer and then the discussion. As always, there will be some potential spoilers for people who have not read any of the books connected to A Song of Ice and Fire. There may also be potential spoilers for House of the Dragon and other future shows adapted by Max. So, if you're okay with this, then please continue listening. Second, the information in this episode comes from the written works of George R.R. Martin and the contributors of A Wiki of Ice and Fire on Westeros.org. Check out the full show notes and other links located on this show's website, thewesterosiprimer.com. With that said, let's begin. Before I continue where I left off in the previous episode, I just want to also make a note of something. Once we talk about the post-regency period, things get a little less detailed on what Aegon did as a king. Unfortunately, Fire and Blood ends with him becoming 16, so some of the details in the second half of this episode and the following episodes won't be as detailed as I've been so far. There will be material I'm covering, but not as much. There's a lot of details we book readers lack the information on, but there are some notable things worth discussing. Where I ended the last episode is the Secret Siege. It's pretty clear that there are plenty of people against the Rogueirs. You can't exactly blame them. They're outsiders grasping at a lot of power. They're not too different from Westerosi nobility, if we can be honest here. If you notice, the conspiracy has way too many connections to Unwin Peak. Yet notice Unwin Peak wasn't in the last episode at all. I have to let you guys know that unfortunately we don't know what really happens to this man because George hasn't written Fire and Blood Volume 2. I'd like to believe he gets some comeuppance for his scheming, because anyone with more than a couple of brain cells realize that pretty much everyone involved is connected to Peak. Unfortunately, he doesn't get any consequences, at least during Aegon's regency, because he wasn't actually there when all of this was happening. But I have little doubt he and his allies still at court were behind it all. I suspect he wanted to get rid of Daenerys and Laura to open up another opportunity for his daughter to marry into the royal family. This is honestly a copy-paste of Otto Hightower's schemes. In the grand scheme of things, House Peak really isn't that important of a house. Members of House Peak act more as cameos in other events in Westerosi history, so Unwin Peak's time as Hand of the King is the highest they ever get to. Now to close out the whole aftermath of the Secret Siege. I will also be quickly going over the fates of conspirators I didn't talk about in the previous episode. Initially, Aegon wanted to restore Rowan as Hand, but it was pretty clear he was too psychologically damaged to continue. Rowan would be sent back to his home in Golden Grove. He would unfortunately die on the way, which is a pretty sad way for his life to end. Another Grey Council was called to reform the group of regents and select a new Hand of the King. It wasn't Aegon's 16th birthday just yet, so he was still considered a minor. There were three new regents selected. The small council was chosen again. Lord Torrhen Manderly became Hand of the King. As I mentioned in the previous episode, Isambard Arryn would become Master of Coin. Gedmund Peak was chosen as Master of Ships, which is just a bizarre choice. Just to make an interesting note, Torrhen Manderly was one of the Manderly brothers who I briefly talked about in the Dance of the Dragons Part 2 episode. Also, when Aegon was a widower after Jaehaera's death, Torrhen Manderly wrote a letter proposing that Aegon should marry a Manderly. If you listeners recall, there was a failed attempt at a marriage between their two houses. This is, of course, a reference to Viserys Targaryen. If you didn't listen to part two of my episodes about Jaehaerys I, you should check it out. As Hand of the King, one of the first things Manderly does is organize a trial for the conspirators and the poisoning of Queen Daenerys and Gaemon Palehair. I had already mentioned in the previous episode a few people died during the Secret Siege and in the immediate aftermath, so I'll briefly discuss some of the fates of the remaining conspirators. As I had mentioned in the previous episode, George Graceford was the Lord Confessor and quickly admitted who else was involved. He ultimately took the black instead of being executed for treason. Sir Gareth Long and Sir Victor Risley also were found guilty. Risley chose trial by combat instead of going to the wall. His accuser was actually Gareth Long, who won the duel. Long would also go to the wall. As I had mentioned in the previous episode, there were three ladies who were among Daenerys' ladies-in-waiting. There was also another lady who acted as the woman in charge of the queen's household. Incidentally, she was also Unwin Peak's aunt. Officially, Lady Clarice Osgray wasn't punished as there was no evidence she had any involvement. Still, there is suspicion of her years later. I'll briefly talk about the other three girls. Cassandra Baratheon was the oldest of Boros Baratheon's children. Until her mother gave birth to a son right after Boros' death, Cassandra was the heir to Storm's End. She's a pretty ambitious and audacious young woman. She had been betrothed to Aegon II and was also one of the many girls at the Maiden's Ball. Cassandra would later admit that she had been having an affair with Sir Mervyn Flowers. Cassandra was arranged to marry a lower-ranking nobleman. She was only spared a harsher punishment because she's a Baratheon and not a lower-ranking lady. The other two ladies, Lucinda Penrose and Priscilla Hogg, were both previous candidates at the Maiden's Ball. They each were later chosen to join Daenerys as one of her ladies. They both admitted they were disgruntled about not marrying Aegon or Viserys. They had to agree to join the faith as septas, or else they'd get their noses cut off. A pretty literal interpretation of cutting your nose to spite your face. Of course, the conspirators weren't the only people who had to be held accountable for crimes. Laura Rogier's brothers were also in a lot of trouble for what their family had done. Laura and Viserys attended the trials. She wasn't accused along with her brothers. To be fair, she doesn't have much say in her family's business, and during this time she was actually pregnant. Lothar Rogier would be tried for theft and fraud in relation to the bank and found guilty. He was offered the choice of the wall or getting his right hand chopped off. He was actually left-handed, so he chose to lose the hand. He would later end up at Old Town and started the Bank of Old Town with Hightower assistance. Rogiero Rogier would be given 7 lashes, even though he wasn't actually found guilty of anything other than for being a Lyseni. The brothel he opened would be sold, including the furnishings. He'd use the money to start a floating brothel on a ship that traveled up and down the narrow sea. Manderly would spend the next few months enacting different policies to improve the situation. In particular, he had to deal with the economic crisis that happened because of the Rogier Bank collapse. Lorator Manderly appointed Sir Lucas Lothston as the new master at arms to replace the disgraced Gareth Long. I had briefly mentioned Lord Lucas Lothston in the previous episode, and this is basically where he appears in the story. He turned out to be a skilled swordsman and a patient teacher for Viserys. He also earned Aegon's respect as well. You'll be hearing about this knight again in a later episode. Aegon and Torrhen Manderly never really got along. Aegon was very mistrustful of people he didn't personally choose, which again isn't that hard to imagine why that would be the case. Manderly thought of Aegon as that sullen boy. The mutual dislike would come to a head when Aegon finally became 16 years old. The regents, hand, and small council were planning a royal progress similar to the ones that Aegon's ancestors had done. If you've listened to the earlier episodes of this season, you'd know what I mean. Aegon arrived at the small council chambers and immediately canceled the royal progress. He also made it clear that as he was now 16 years old, he no longer needed regents and they were all dismissed. Fire and Blood states that the young king made an enemy of Manderly for this humiliating way of dismissing him. However, we don't know what that actually means, if anything, since we don't have a Volume 2 at this time. So now I'm going to give you the highlights of what happens during Aegon's adult years. They won't be as detailed since we don't have as much information available like in Fire and Blood. Some of this does come from the World of Ice and Fire and other sources. Just to briefly go back to Viserys and Laura. As I mentioned, in AC 136, while the trials were happening, Laura was pregnant a second time. She would give birth to another son who was named Aemon. One interesting thing to note is that an egg was placed in Aemon's cradle. Little Aegon would actually pick up the egg to hit his baby brother with, and Laura had to separate the boys. I personally think this was a foreshadowing of their relationship as adults, but that's for a future episode. In AC 138, Laura would give birth to her final child, a girl named Nerys. Why her final child? It's because in AC 139, Laura would leave King's Landing, essentially abandoning her husband and her children. Laura would apparently die in AC 145. We're assuming it's an illness, but who really knows? So again, if you're keeping up with the timeline, in AC 139, Viserys is only 17 years old. He's a single father with 3 children under the age of 5, and he's still a teenager. I'm repeating myself, but this is one of the weirder writing decisions you've done, George. It's hard for me to judge the decisions made here by Laura. She travels to Westeros for the sake of her much younger husband. She lives in a foreign court where she's not truly part of it. She's unable to adapt to the local customs and she's treated as a suspicious foreigner. The collapse of her family's fortunes and then the conspiracy against her family put a toll on her, I would imagine. I also suspect she tried to stay longer, but it was all getting too much for her. Clearly, she can't leave with her children or Viserys, considering they are Targaryens. They are part of the royal family. There's a case to be made that her not being in the picture created problems, as I'll get to in the next couple of episodes. It was said Viserys would be serious and grim after his wife leaves. It makes me wonder whether she really loved him or not. I mean, it's hard to imagine really loving a younger spouse when you're an adult and he's a literal child when you got married and started having kids together. It's never going to stop being weird to me. As for Aegon and Daenerys, it wouldn't be until Daenerys also turned 16 years old that they would finally consummate their marriage. Aegon remained a serious, troubled adult like he was as a child. Not surprising because, again, therapy doesn't exist in Westeros. The couple would have 5 children together. Daeron born in AC 143, Baelor born in AC 144, Dana born in AC 145, Rhaena born in AC 147, and Elaena born in AC 150. Aegon's reign as an adult was fairly peaceful. However, his lack of social IQ made it difficult for anyone outside of his family to like him or think well of him. The fact the dragons were never able to return again to the numbers they once had resulted in him being known as Aegon the Dragonbane. At some point, Viserys would become Hand of the King for his brother, and seemed to be a pretty good one at that. Additionally, I'll briefly mention what happens to Baela and Rhaena during Aegon's reign. After the death of Corwyn Corbray, Rhaena Targaryen would eventually remarry. She married Garmond Hightower, who was the younger brother of Lyonel Hightower. Both Lyonel and Garmond were the sons of Ormond Hightower. He's the nephew of Otto Hightower and also the head of his army during the First Battle of Tumbleton. Rhaena and Garmond would have 6 daughters together. That's about all we know unless we get a Fire and Blood Volume 2. Baela and Aelyn Velaryon, of course, had a daughter named Lena. They would also have another child, but it's not clear what the gender or name of the second child is. It's also not clear when she or her sister would pass away. Though interestingly, there is fan theories that at some point between AC 136, which is the end of Aegon's regency, and AC 176, Baela would pass away. Why? Well, in AC 176, Aelyn apparently had interest in marrying another woman. Obviously, he couldn't do that if his wife was still alive. What else happens to her, we don't really know because no volume 2. As for Daenerys, we unfortunately don't know much else about her after she has 5 children with Aegon. It's again something we'd need volume 2 to find out more about, unfortunately. Aegon would only live until AC 157. He apparently contracts consumption, which is an old name for tuberculosis. Like I had said before, Aegon's reign was notable and eventful mostly during his regency and not quite as much during his adult years. At least without George explaining further with a volume 2. Naturally, once Aegon dies, the next in line was his 14-year-old son, Daeron. And that is the final part of Aegon III's life and reign. There are some exciting new characters I'll be discussing in the month of January. I hope you guys are eager to hear about what happens with this next generation of House Targaryen. I can assure you, all the kids I quickly mentioned in this episode will be really interesting characters who make a lot of impact in Westerosi history. We're inching ever closer to Robert's Rebellion, which is pretty much the end of this season, but we have a few more generations to go. So before I close out this episode, the final announcements of 2024. So in the next few days, I'm going to be adding surveys to the website. I'm probably going to create a survey page on the site that will have links to different surveys I'll be running. This will help me improve this show, especially in future seasons. Also, I'm hoping that some of you listening to this show are interested in forming a community. Believe it or not, I'm actually averaging 40 listeners currently. How did I figure that out? It's based on how many downloads or streams I'm getting in the first 24 hours a new episode gets released. So I'm actually pretty curious what would be the best way to form a community with you listeners. I've admittedly been pretty lacking on the blog and social media. Even my newsletter has been put to the wayside. I admit I haven't posted a newsletter since I started this season of the show. To be fair, my work life has been pretty busy lately. Also, I've been spread thin after work in the past couple of months. I think this holiday break I'm taking will hopefully fix things. That's why I'm genuinely curious, what would you guys prefer as a way to interact with me and maybe other listeners? Discord? The newsletter? I have a Substack newsletter for this show. It's part newsletter, part blog, and has some other interesting features that make it a mini forum as well. I would really like to know. Also, like I said at the beginning of this episode, I created an email address for this podcast. So feel free to reach out. All links are available on the website. I also want to give a shout out to all of you listeners. When I combine the downloads I got from my previous host, Acast, and Red Circle combined, this show has been listened to over 1,700 times. I'm really grateful for all of you listeners. Most of you guys are from the US, just like I am, which doesn't surprise me since Americans make up the largest percentage of podcast listeners overall. I also want to give a shout out to the non-Americans who listen to this show. Just to let you guys know, in the last 30 days, the top 10 countries my listeners come from are United States, India, Australia, United Kingdom, Germany, France, Netherlands, Canada, Japan, and Brazil. As always, if you're interested in finding out more for yourself, feel free to go to the full show notes where I will have links. Though be aware, if you do any of this research, there will be spoilers to the novels House of the Dragon and Max's future adaptations. Thank you for listening, and tune into the next episode where I'll talk about Daeron the First and the rest of his peers. So I will wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. See you in 2025. What did you think of this episode? Check out the WesterosiPrimer.com and let me know what you think of this episode. If you have a friend or two that might like the show, make sure to share.